Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Let me tell you a little bit about Bet Online. It remains your number one spot for NBA, MLB, MMA, boxing. It doesn't matter. Every single prop, every single play, every single point, it's all at Bet Online. When it comes to bets, when it comes to props, everything that you need is at your headquarters for sports betting. That's Bet Online. Head to the website right now, use your mobile device, sign up, get a 50% welcome bonus. Don't forget to use the promo code BLEAV, that's Believe, to get yourself a 50% welcome bonus. Come on, there's no need to hesitate. Bet Online, where the game starts.
I understand it's not something comfortable to talk about, like your sexual function or your sexual performance, but don't sell yourself short. It is important. But you know what else is kind of important? Not being totally embarrassed by going to a pharmacy or having to deal with a doctor when you're talking about prescriptions with some of these drugs to help you perform up to snuff in the bedroom. That's where Blue Chew comes in, okay? It is the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis at a fraction of the price. And the best part is you don't have to deal with anybody. It comes right to your door. You're never ever gonna be as happy as you are now to see the postman coming when you know that the package for your package is right there, all thanks to Blue Chew. Do yourself a favor, head to bluechew.com, use the promo code LIKES, get your first month for free, and see what I'm talking about, because you deserve to have the best sex of your life. And thank you, Blue Chew, for sponsoring this podcast.
I hope you're ready to have your mind blown with the greatest health and fitness information on the planet.
Yes, bitch!
Welcome to the Mikey Likes You podcast. I am Mikey who likes. You are you who is liked. An amazing system. Pretty cut and dry. Today's guest, I know I don't have guests often, but I'm really excited about it. As you can see, this amazing new studio. I have to thank Kevin and Giorgio here because this is really fantastic. And it makes me feel like an actual professional for once. But today's guest is worth all of this because he is one of the most sought after, well-respected bodybuilding prep coaches and a very experienced bodybuilder and powerlifter himself, a man who has degrees in stuff that I did not even know existed. And that is one of the first things that I want to dive into. He is Justin Harris. How are you, man?
Good. I'm great. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Also, one of the founders of First Attachment, in my opinion, the greatest health and fitness supplements on the market. And I mean that. I'm not just blowing smoke.
Thank you very much.
And I have to ask, like right out of the gate, what is atomic physics?
Well, it's physics. My research, I'll just say what it was. We would do electron capture. So we would take an ionized particle like argon and strip electrons from it. So it's, you know, ionized, and then we put it in a particle accelerator, and you accelerate it towards an atomic or molecular target. And so that's where atomic comes from. Yeah. Just you're doing things on the atomic scale, not the nuclear scale, which would be inside the nucleus. And so that they collide, they don't really collide, you know, electromagnetic forces prevent them from colliding, but it's just the same forces that make us feel like we're sitting on the chair. And they as they pass through, they collect an electron or collect two electrons, and there's a change in energy, and there's a Q value. And that matters because in quantum mechanics, what quantum mechanics mean or quantum physics means is that things are quantized. You know, like you or I can have any amount of energy. We can be any amount tall. We can weigh any amount of weight. You know, it's all continuous scale. When they find when you go small enough, that doesn't happen anymore. Like an electron can't have any energy. It can have certain quantized energy states. And so we would you know, accelerate. They would reach some energy state. There'd be an excess of Q value, excess energy, and we'd measure that. Really, I mean, it sounds way cooler than it is. It's really just like another cog in the wheel of trying to, you know, get a better understanding of what goes on at the atomic level.
At the atomic level.
Yeah.
It's being that you have that background and also an extensive knowledge in kinesiology, is it frustrating to listen to people, especially now with like social media and YouTube and things, when they're giving advice, bro science based advice, and you're just probably sitting there going like, you don't even know what you don't know.
Yeah. It's not like frustrating, like mad at them. Cause I I think when I went back, because I did physics later in life, I went back, and part of the reason I did that is because of that, because I just got so tired of my whole, like, income, my job, everything being dependent on people, you know, like what I said on the internet, where, you know, back then it was the forum, so it was worse. I mean, it was better and worse, but it was worse in the fact that you were actually talking to people. Now with social media, you're just kind of talking to the ether.
It's a shotgun effect.
Yeah, there's not as much like back and forth. Where with forums, you were like basically giving a lecture and all the people then they're commenting on it and you're replying to it. And, you know, someone would argue something and you would state a fact, like an irrefutable fact. It's like not up for debate. It's, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. And someone else would come in with all caps and say 2 + 2 = 5. And they would just, they would argue, they were willing to argue longer and harder than you were. And the people reading aren't experts. So they don't know who is right. And so they're just going to end up thinking whoever was writing in the all caps the longest.
Right.
Is the, and so I thought, I went back to physics because I wanted something that was just more truly concrete, you know, black and white. You either have the correct answer. If you're a theorist, you theorize something mathematically, and if it's validated by experiment, it's true. If it's not, that's not true. Simple, you know. Whatever your theory is, no matter how beautiful it is or how mathematically elegant it is, if it's not verified by experiment, it's wrong. Boom, dead, out the door. You know, we live in a physical world. If we can't replicate it with a physical experiment, then it can't be true. And then what's even cooler is the math has never been wrong.
Right.
If you get the math right, it's always right, as if our world was written in the programming language of mathematics. It's less like frustrating now. It's more like, you know, like I wish I could like get all this information into people's heads, because I think the one thing that like physics really taught me was I realized how many things I was saying and I didn't know why I said it. Because I heard someone else say it, or,
sure,
you know, but it wasn't my statement. It wasn't my knowledge, and it might not even been theirs. And it probably wasn't even right.
Well, certainly in the bodybuilding world, I mean, performance sports tend to be a little different, you know, where people will really constantly look for that verifiable stuff. But bodybuilding, a lot of times it is just kind of handed down from your forefathers, you know?
Yeah, and it's kind of forced to be that way almost because it's so far in the cutting edge of, you know, that whatever the current research is in kinesiology or weight training, it's just slow developing, you know, because you want to know, sarcoplasmic growth. There used to be just assumed to be myofibrillar growth, which was the actual protein structures. That's the, you know, increased protein structures on the muscle. That's how it grows. And then bodybuilders would argue that there's more going on because, look, we do all this pump training and we're not as strong. We can't have as much myofibrillar, you know, hypertrophy as these power lifters, but we look so much more muscular. Why are our muscles so round? Why is that not with theirs? And we'd call it sarcoplasmic growth, which would be like all the non-contractile tissue inside a muscle, which is actually quite a bit because, you know, like if you took a pound of steak, that's a muscle tissue, you know?
Sure.
That's a hydrated muscle tissue. If you dehydrate it down to beef jerky and get rid of all the non-contractile tissue, that's the myofibrillar portion, is that tiny little beef jerky. So most of your muscle is not muscle, you know?
Right. And so, even just cooking it. Take a pound of sirloin and weigh it, and then you measure it after you cook it. I mean, it's going to be 7 ounces, 8 ounces.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So what was that? Was that not muscle? Because, you know, this sirloin is muscle tissue of a cow.
Right.
So what did you bake off? You know, and we'd argue the sarcoplasmic is all the, you know, like the water, the glycogen, blood vessels, capillaries, arteries, arterioles, things like that. And all that takes up space in the muscle. And we'd argue that certain training styles will increase the amount of muscle you hold or water you hold in a muscle, increase the amount of glycogen you hold in a muscle, increase the blood vessel, you know, size, how much the microvasculature is dilated. And even in 2015, I was doing a seminar in Detroit, Michigan, and we were still arguing whether that was a thing or not.
Right.
And now, you know, it's, and you go on Wikipedia, it's all just stated as fact now. So like, you know, we're always learning new things, but the bodybuilders knew that 60 years ago. You know, Arnold was training, you know, for the pump.
Right.
It took science 60 years to before they can. And it's not like science is slow. It's like science is precise. If I want to know how, you know, like a research would be like on your quadricep, on the, you know, rectus femoris. You bring people in, you have them do leg extensions under some set criteria. Well, building muscle is a slow process. You know, if you If you can add even 1 gram of muscle tissue per hour, you know, you think you eat, you know, 50 grams of protein in a meal, or if you only grab 24 grams, 25 grams across the whole day, you're gaining like 50 pounds of muscle a year.
Yeah.
So we're gaining,
which is Mr. Olympia level.
Yeah. Even they don't. Yeah. I mean, even they're only gaining like 15 a year, you know, they just do it for a lot of years. So you have to do, to really see the appreciable changes in hypertrophy or strength gains, you had to follow research subjects for months and months and months. Well, you can't lock people in a room for a year and a half. So you're trusting on them to self-report data. And so it's, you know, it's a hard, and then all that's done to get like one precise bit of information, like, you know, in this double-blind controlled test with leg extensions, those participants who did three sets of 12 were 12 was rated of a perceived exertion of 9, and all three sets, you know, increased their quadricep muscular density 1% over the subjects did blah 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 blah.
3 by 8.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, but that's how the, but that's scientific information, because it has to be, you know, like what. It's much easier to just guess at what works, you know, and kind of get somewhere in the periphery of what's working, you know, like maybe this is exactly what we need, whatever it is, you know, like this type of training, this type of food, but, you know, like, it's, you know, kind of blends out. So if you're somewhere in that area, like what bodybuilders would do, like they notice when I do more reps, I do more sets, I get a pump, my body seems to look bigger and grow faster than when I don't get a pump and I don't do. And so they might not nail it, but they kind of see how that's going.
Right.
And it just takes the science, you know, decades to be.
For me, as an absolute layperson, I mean, I barely graduated high school. And certainly with like the STEM stuff it seemed like a foreign language. But where I got, you know, where I became familiar with guys like you in the forums in 2002, 2003, was that I at least gained enough knowledge to know when something presented as science is not science. Uh-huh. And that's, I think for me, as someone who could be looked at as, I guess, a voice of fitness and bodybuilding on the internet, I see so many people who are just, they sincerely want to make a change in their body, and they're looking at all these studies all day long. Right. And they'll present it to me and I go, well, that's not even a real study. You understand that, right? Like that's meaningless.
You nailed it. Cause that's the biggest problem with the fitness industry, is that it's really not that complex, but really brilliant people go into, you know, like mathematics and physics. They don't go into kinesiology. So there's like, if there isn't like a huge, I don't know the word, research technical push, it's people who, you know, like want to be a gym teacher, you know, and nothing wrong with, because I did the same thing, be an exercise physiologist. I thought, hey, that'd be an easy job. I just watch people exercise all day. It's awesome. You know,
what you love.
As an 18-year-old kid, I thought, hey, you know, like, you don't know how the world works. So you think, I get to wear sweatpants to work every day. This is going to be great. But there's the problem that it's complex enough, and the, like, I guess like the answers or the correct way of doing things are so specific. Like what's correct for these circumstances isn't correct for every circumstance. Sure. So it just kind of lends itself to charlatans, you know, like the things like, you know, starvation mode, which isn't a thing, or, you know, you're not eating enough to lose weight, which is the exact opposite, and that's plain and simple, because that's thermodynamics. That's the law of conservation of energy. Energy can't be created or destroyed. And if you look at our, because we're just like any other thermodynamic system, we're the same as a car, really. And a car, we intake energy as gasoline, we store that energy, and we use that energy up until it's gone. And if it's gone, we can't create more, and like we have to put more gas in. We can't just create out of thin air. Our bodies are the same thing. We eat food as energy. That's like our gasoline. The only difference is we store it three different ways. We store it as muscle tissue, protein. We store it as carbohydrates, as glycogen in the muscle and the liver. And we store it as fat, body fat, which we can store almost unlimited amount. And so you can imagine if your car were, you know, you had to fill up every day, you know, you picked a certain amount of gas, and any excess gas ended up getting stored somewhere in the body.
Yeah, in the trunk.
Yeah, that's all we are. And so you can imagine, like, what you're saying by, like, you're not eating enough means, like, the reason you are getting the reason you never run out of gas is because you're not putting gas in the car.
Right.
It's like the complete opposite. And so there's just so many, like, you know, myths that, like keto. You know, like people say, well, you're burning fat. It's great because it makes your body burn fat.
You're storing more too.
Yeah, because you're eating fat. Yeah. You still only burn fat from your body if you eat less calories than you burn off.
Sure.
Period.
And all that stuff is, you know, it's kind of irrefutable when you start getting into looking at things that are at a genuinely sophisticated scientific level. But at the same time, when you can take that information and then be, you know, a conduit to people who aren't really concerned with understanding it on a bigger level, because that's a perfect example. You know, keto. Well, you're burning more fat. You are, but you're also storing more fat. Like a pretty considerable amount, right? From someone who's eating a low fat diet. But at the same time, if over a 6 week span, doing keto makes you eat less.
Yep. And that's,
let's go for it.
Yeah. And that's, and that's like, that's where it gets murky, because most of these things, that's why it works. It's not, it doesn't work because it's like you're fat optimized or whatever they try to say. It works because fats slow digestion. They stick with you longer. They make you feel full longer. And most people, and the food variety gets so limited. You know, it sounds great. Like, I can eat bacon and steak all day. And that is great for a day or two. But by week six, where all you've eaten is meat and eggs, you're not so, I mean, steak's still good. You know, it's like the joke, if I tell you about the worst steak I ever had, it was amazing.
It was better than any asparagus I've ever had. Yeah.
So, but it's still like, you know, so you're not as hungry. So you just eat less and that's it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't sell.
Yeah.
It's much better to create, like, you know, Atkins or keto and add words to it and talk about being fat optimized or, you know, what you know, whatever you want.
And you know, one of the things I really like about you and why it's so interesting for a guy like me to pick your brain is because you have a wealth of understanding for preparing to step on stage and look a certain way, which is so difficult to do it and to do it well. But also you have a pretty high level of understanding for performance. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I see that upsets me in my world is that I have a lot of friends that are MMA fighters, grapplers, boxers, college athletes. And then I have a lot of friends from the physique sports. Mm-hmm. And when I see a guy who's rolling jiu-jitsu six times a week for 2 hours at a time, going to a high fat, low carbohydrate diet. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, I know it's easier for you to lose weight, but you're not training very hard for one reason and one reason alone. Yeah,
exactly. And that's perfect. That's like, that's another, you nailed it there, because it's two completely different ways of eating for performance versus eating for appearance. Mm-hmm. It's completely different. Like what he's doing is eating for appearance, basically losing weight, but that is not optimized for performance at all. And there are ways to optimize a diet for performance that also changes your appearance good, but they're not like, they're not mutually identical, you know?
Right.
And a kind of one example I've used for that would be like, cause people, bodybuilders don't, a lot of people, especially younger guys, don't want to believe that, cause they want to believe how big of muscles they have is related to how hard they train.
Right.
It is, you know, loosely, but it's really much more closely related to the diet. And going back to MMA or boxing, I'd say look at Tyson Fury or Daniel Cormier. You know, the two of the baddest men on the planet, neither of them look like a bodybuilder.
And
you know?
Sometimes, and most of the time, the guys who step in a ring or an octagon who do look like bodybuilders are not well known for their conditioning.
Yeah, because muscle sucks oxygen.
Yeah.
I mean, every... That's, you know, every muscular contraction, that's part of the process. You're sucking oxygen out of the body. And so that's what you get, lactate buildup. So you need you need as strong and explosive of muscles as possible to get the job done for whatever you know, like if you're doing MMA or wrestling, you know, different sports are different, but you need your muscles to be optimized as much as possible for what that sport needs as far as strength and explosiveness, speed, endurance, without any additional useless muscle mass.
Right.
Which is actually, the amount for that is quite low, because you could see like some really, really strong power lifters in the 198 pound class or 181 class who aren't especially muscular,
right?
But they've learned, you know, they get like this from leverages and they have maximized the strength of the muscle they do have. And that's what you want much more than big muscles.
And when you're looking at developing musculature, you know, let's say any young man, I think that's going to be paramount. Mm-hmm. It's like, why spend time in the gym unless you're going to have that appearance, you know, and it changes the way you feel about yourself. And it is beautiful. I'm not trying to minimize that. It's certainly the reason I train hard at age 44. And it's the same reason I trained hard at 19. But there is that very hard middle ground. And certainly for a guy like me with my level of understanding, it's very hard for me to explain to people that, like we were talking about the sarcoplasmic growth, and like training like Arnold is probably a really good idea if you want to be a mass monster. Mm-hmm. But there has to be some level of that kind of like myofibril training, right? I mean, guys like you tend to always be these world class. You look at Ronnie Coleman, you look at Arnold Schwarzenegger, you look at Dorian Yates before they got into training, however their training became when they were stepping on Mr. Olympia. They spent time powerlifting.
Well, Ronnie probably did it perfectly. And Ronnie is a perfect across the board for bodybuilding. And I'll try to cover all of them if I can quickly. But yeah, he started with powerlifting. So he wasn't necessarily focused on optimizing the rate of muscle growth, but he was increasing his strength dramatically. So then when he switched to bodybuilding, he was very strong and able to move very heavy weights in a bodybuilding rep range, in a bodybuilding tempo, at a bodybuilding rep pace, in a bodybuilding volume, where, and that's what dramatically accelerated the muscle mass. You know, having that strength allowed him to be an even better bodybuilder when he wasn't training for strength. And then and other things, like there's the kind of the dumb meathead stereotype. And that's a reason, because the only people who succeed as a bodybuilder are almost have to be dumb. And I'll say why, because the worst thing you can do is, you know, overthink things. And so you want the minimum amount of knowledge to get the maximum amount of
results,
which for Ronnie was, he met Brian Dobson. Brian gave him a workout plan. He did the same workout for 25 years. Because this is what works, you know. And then he met.
And he did the same cycle. You know, he was training and competing natural and finishing fourth.
Yeah.
And he said, "Flex, what do I do?" And Flex said, "Take these drugs." He's like, "Okay." Yeah. And he did that for 25 years.
And it doesn't. So this is what works. I don't overthink it.
Yeah.
And that's the worst thing, because that's why, I mean, that's what killed me as a bodybuilder, because I'd always be overthinking, you know. It's like, but that's it, you know. So he. You couldn't like genetically design a better bodybuilder. Get someone freakish with great genetics, obviously freakish building genetics. Muscle, make him really, really strong before he tries to put those genetics to use.
Yeah.
And then when he tries to put those genetics to use, he's already really strong. He meets someone who gives him a free, you know, a free gym membership, gives him a workout, and then he meets the best bodybuilding nutritionist in the world. It's like, boom, you know, and then Flex Wheeler tells him the behind the scenes secrets.
You were saying, you know, don't overthink things. And I couldn't hammer that home more. I say that to my clients. I say that to my friends. If they ever ask me, you know, like really train and close to failure and do it consistently. You get your recovery and eat well. Really, it's all about diet. But at the same time, do you think that your penchant for overthinking things is what made you a great coach?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And that's in like the old saying, like those who can do and those who can't teach or coach. Yeah. Partly for me, I like getting big or adding size was never difficult for me. My family's all very big. I was going to be, when I went back to grad school, I didn't work out for, I don't know, like 5 years. I don't think I ever went below 240 pounds. I'm just.
Oh, like, fuck off.
And it wasn't a pretty. See, that's.
I don't care. My dad's 5'7". My mom's 4'10". I was like little teeny bones.
I've told this story before. I got a really bad grade in like third grade. We were learning about normals or averages or something. And I said the average man was 6'2", 250. I didn't know anyone who was smaller than that. And so I'm like, my dad, my uncle, my other uncle, my older cousins. I'm like, they're all, between 250 and 300. And they're all like a little 6'6", 2". And I know they're big, so I'll drop it a little bit. I was like off by 100 pounds. And
it goes in the opposite direction, though. I'm glad you brought that up, because to you at 25 years old, your point of reference was that the average man is 6'5", 240. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm having a lot of problem trying to deal with people, particularly young men. When either I'm working with them or I'm just hanging out with them and talking with them. And because their point of reference so often today in 2023 is 30% body fat.
Yeah.
They think they're lean.
Yeah.
In the same, it goes in both directions, because I at 44 feel fat. And you and I talked about when we sat down, you're like, I'm puffy from.
Yeah.
And
every time I travel, that's because I ate like something at the airport. Or I got PF Chang's last night. And sure thing. I woke up this morning. My ring's tight. My face is swollen. I was like, oh.
But for you and I, because we're surrounded by shredded people.
Yeah.
We feel, you know, and I think it goes in both directions. And it's like, how do you make heads or tails of that point of reference when you're guiding someone in either way? Because I'm sure there's probably a lot of physique athletes and bodybuilders you work with who are 7% and they're really neurotic because they're not 5.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you work with people who are 25% who think like, I'll see my abs by summer. Yeah.
I think it's a kind of a dual effect. One is that it's hard to change. And so if you're like a permabulker, And that's what you're known for when you wear a t-shirt, the sleeves are tight on your arms. You know, that's like your thing. You know, you feel big. You've been trying to get big. You've been lifting heavy weights. You've been eating a lot. And so you put all this effort into being big, you know, and when you're in a t-shirt in the gym, you do look big. At the beach, you've got, you know, and you're 18% body fat. You don't look big anymore. You look like, you know, you look like
a football player.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you don't want that. You want to be able to go to the beach and have abs and be like, oh, that dude's shredded. But to do that, you have to completely change everything about you. You're no longer the big guy at the gym. For 4 months, everyone at the gym is going to be asking, dude, are you sick? What happened to you? Oh, you used to be so big, you know? And so that's really hard. So you don't want to change that. And then like the skinny guys are the opposite. Like have abs. That's what they're known for. You know, like they're at a party and meet, you know, like, look at that, you know, yeah. Like show their abs. They go to the beach and everyone's looking at me. I got abs. I want to be big, you know, I want to look big in a shirt also, but to do that, I have to lose my abs. And so those are like, it's really hard to, I think I forgot the point of the question because I had just a second
topic. Changing people's point of reference.
Yeah. Right?
Like, because I see it, look, with Hollywood a lot, having been behind the curtain with people who are training, literally like the best physiques for the screen that mm-hmm. we've seen sometimes, you know, and people get this sense, besides maybe The Rock, you know, people have this idea when they see them on screen, like that guy is 250 pounds. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, no, he's 150 pounds. Yeah. He just looks amazing.
Yeah. You know? And that's the other weird thing that's so hard to, because it's all an illusion. You know, the whole sport in general is just kind of like counterintuitive, because what builds muscle is not necessarily getting really strong. But mm-hmm. your thought is, I'll go to the gym, get really strong. That's how I get big, you know? And so, you know, young kids go and they try to get really strong and they're not getting bigger. They don't understand why. So it's like everything's kind of that way. What does look big is like, you know, like Mark Wahlberg looks jacked. Mark Wahlberg's
my size.
Yeah. So, but he's.
He looks amazing.
Yeah. In a, like a Henley shirt where you can kind of see his chest and his abs through the shirt, and he's got veins in his arms. You know, but that's the appearance. I don't really have an answer for it, I guess. But for me, it seems like at least with working with people is they kind of get grown to this identity, because if they've been training for a while, however they look, however long they've been training has taken them that long to get the way they look now. So they put a lot of effort into it.
Right.
You know, and so to like completely change that is hard, because then their brains, I think, almost think like, well, why did I put all that effort in if now I have to
right.
lose my identity?
And I don't think there's any question to the guy who's a mass monster, who's 25% body fat, 18% to 18 to 25. Like that guy needs to lean out.
Yeah. That was going to be my second point was, and I think there's like a weird self-delusion I think we all have, because he knows that. He knows he has to lean out, but he like convinces himself that he maybe doesn't. It's like, you know, like a weird, because this shirt, you know, my it's tight on my arms, so I can convince myself that I'm jacked, even though I know if I took it off, it would be like, you know, like, do you even work out, bro? And so like, I think like, it's this weird thing. We all know the truth, but it's easier, I think, to just kind of lie to ourselves and right. like, or don't think about it too much.
Well, my question was, and I that's an excellent point, because not only are you lying to yourself, but you also are leaning into something that you're probably good at. Mm-hmm. Most mass monster dudes, most guys who are offensive linemen or power lifters that got into bodybuilding were naturally big and probably had a really good capacity to build muscle.
Yeah.
Most guys who look like me, probably never were. It was really hard for me to get big, but when I really follow any level of consistent diet and trained, I look good, you know. So you want to kind of lean into what
I like that, actually, because that's like that's another like the self-delusion, because you know, like I was the naturally big guy, so it's easier for me to do the like lift heavy, eat a lot of food, you know, because that's what my body wants to do anyways, you know. And so it's almost like another thing, like letting yourself fall into that trap of deep down somewhere, I know I need to lose body fat, I know this, but this is what I like to do, this is what is easy for me, and I get to convince myself that what I'm doing is hard, you right. know.
Yeah,
what's well, really hard is going against what you're good at,
right? And that's my next question, is like, as someone who really has a high level of knowledge in physique changing, what do you do for the guy or gal who oftentimes is neither in their mind? You know, you're just the kind of the skinny fat, the typical skinny mm-hmm. fat. You're 30 and you're tired of the way you look, and you look in the mirror and you don't have considerable muscle. You don't know if you can, maybe you should bulk up, mm-hmm. but you're also kind of pudgy. Like, You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Where do you go from there? If you're delivered the skinny fat client, what's the best track?
Always get lean first. Building muscle is just a slow process. Very, very, because you can do the numbers. I think only like 30%, I can't remember the exact amount, but only 30% of even muscle proteins is actual amino acids, you right. know? But even say 100% of it is amino acids. You know, if you gained, you know, like we did this like earlier, if you gain 20 pounds of muscle in a year, that's only 25 grams of new muscle a day, you know? So you, like nothing's happened. So you don't look any different day after day, week after week, even over a year. It takes like a full year of really, really, really focused training to build enough muscle to look different. And so right. if you're skinny fat and hate the way you look, waiting a year to look slightly different, you're not going to be motivated at the end of that year.
I'm probably less motivated because you put in all the work.
Yeah, and that's what everyone says. Yeah. So the best path almost always is to get as lean as possible right now. And that's actually the best way to get big at some future date.
Because, that rebound. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So always, because you can change the way you look much more quickly by dropping body fat. So you can, in 3 months, 12 weeks, you can completely change the way you look. Now you'll be small, but you'll be ripped. You'll be skinny and you won't like that. But then now you're in a position to change that quicker because, like you said, the rebound when you're, so to kind of like, well, you know, like there's lower testosterone levels in men mm-hmm. and everyone's like, we don't know why. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of reasons, but one reason for sure is that we're a higher body fat.
Sure.
When you get above about, you know, like men were supposed to be about 8 to 12% body fat. Women, 14 to 20%, kind of that range, and that's like where we're hormonally optimized to continue reproducing life. So for men, that means our testosterone production is highest, our rate of aromatization to estrogen is lower, our insulin sensitivity is higher. So all those things that help us grow muscle quicker and maintain a low body fat are best when we have a low body fat.
Right,
and even worse when you get above that. When you get above 12% body fat, you produce less testosterone to begin with. And even worse, more of that testosterone gets converted to estrogen. And I've said this story a bunch of times, but everyone had like a fat friend in their 20s who was obviously way past puberty. You know, he's 24, but he's kind of got only like a little beard on his neck, you know, not a full beard, almost no chest hair. You know, he's kind of got like little breasts, you know, like moobs or yeah. man boobs or whatever. And that's because during puberty, he was at a body fat level where he wasn't producing as much testosterone as probably his friends were, and more of it was converting to estrogen. And so he's got all these permanent effects from it now.
And we really only see that now. And what I mean by that is like, go watch a Scorsese film from the 70s, yeah. right? Of course, there's the mafioso guy who's fat, right? Yeah. My father's a perfect example. I'm not crapping on you. My dad's obese. My dad's overweight, and he's a short guy, and he has been since he was probably in his 40s, since he was around my age. But my dad, if he takes his shirt off, is like that classic old man yeah. overweight. He's got a big belly, but he's hairy and he's rocked.
Yeah, yeah.
And because in 1950, my dad was like a beanpole, yeah, you know, yeah. and was in the military at 140 pounds. But now you're seeing like a different type of fat, like mm-hmm. where people are made of goo and they yeah, have like almost cellulite.
Well, they're fat through their puberty. So yeah. your father with the normal puberty probably had sky high testosterone levels like everyone did back then. You know, so he had, you know, low estrogen, high testosterone, good insulin sensitivity. And so during all those years where like, you know, like your body structure is formed more or less,
right.
he was hormonally optimized. And then as he got older, he got fat. But that's, you know, way past. So like the things that testosterone affect while you're developing, you know, facial hair, you know, what your like abs apple, your voice, body hair, you know, how wide your shoulders are because they're really high androgen density in the shoulders. All that stuff was he had the right hormones for that. And so he's got that, like you said, that classic, you know, old man strength look
yeah.
where,
yeah.
you know, he's looks pudgy. He's got a beard, got hair everywhere, but you know, he could break your fist if you shook his hand too hard.
Right. And like there was a thing I should have like a real professional turned my phone off.
I thought that was me.
and that was a thing too in the fact that like one thing that I really worry about is that I was watching some period piece. I don't know, Peaky Blinders maybe, but something from the earlier 20th century. And I got to thinking about how overweight, not even fat, just slightly overweight people in 1920 were really rich
yeah.
all over the world. I yeah. mean, Western Europe, you had to be royalty to be fat because even if you were slightly below like ballin', you were working in at the stockyard, or you were swinging a hammer, or you were, and you didn't have money to stuff your face. Yeah. Now it's kind of the opposite. Yep. I don't know many people who are in, get past 35 that are in peak physical condition that aren't really wealthy.
It's weird. Yeah, because it used to be, and this isn't my say. I think Jordan Peterson said this, so I hate being like repeating something someone else said without it being my own, because I don't know if it's true, but he said in like 1890, the average American lived on $1 per day in today's dollars.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so like, my grandparents, they had, like a 2-bedroom house, you know, they lived in the 1-bedroom, all the other kids were in the other bedroom. They had one car, you know, you lived on a farm, no TV, maybe a radio, you know, so, you know, the only things you ate were potatoes and meat, you know, when you
could get it.
Yeah. When you butchered one of the cows, you never had fruit, you know, fruit in season, maybe if you live in season, where meaning whatever grew in Michigan in the summer.
Right.
You know, not like you were getting pineapple or exotic fruits.
If you grew up where I grew up, they probably had oranges and.
Yeah. Yeah. But like my grandpa probably didn't even know a papaya existed.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so there's all that. So the only people who had the ability to get fat were people who had a lot of resources. Where now it's like you said, it's the opposite. Where now food is so easy to get, relatively cheap. It's, and I say relatively cheap because it's food's expensive. We're just all rich.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, like we complain about inequality, and there is, and inequality is really bad. But even poor people today are, you know, like we're bringing something like 200 or 300,000 people out of poverty every single day in the world.
Right.
I mean, like incredible removal of poverty, better than any time in human history. But because the ultra wealthy are getting so wealthy, you know, it seems like that's not happening, you know, because the poor are getting so much more wealthy, but the rich are getting just wealthier, you know, way faster. But so now even our poor people have the resources to get the food, and so now you have to have like the higher level resources to be able to like
make
healthy food taste good, you know, like you know, buy the expensive ingredients, so it's a really weird scenario.
And also you made a really good point. It's like you have to be a certain level of wealthy to avoid it, unless you're a psychopath. And by that, I mean, like, unless you're kind of like you and me at 19, 20, 22, because I know that you know that you were probably trying to get stage ready on canned tuna.
Dented cans of tuna, the 39-cent cans. And
probably like that bulk white rice. Yeah, know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The burlap sack. Yeah. You get 10 pounds of rice for a couple bucks. There's always old school supermarket that's not like even like a franchise somewhere in town is going to have an aisle with burlap sacks where you could buy like a lifetime supply of rice for $9.99. Literally, you know, like it'll have mold and stuff on it long before you could ever eat it. And for less than the cost of a single, you know, Happy Meal.
That's my point too, is like I don't mean to in any way deter someone who's watching this and they're like, I'm a college student with two side jobs. I guess I can't be lean. Mm-hmm. Is that, no. In fact, most bodybuilders who aren't like the top five on Mr. Olympia are struggling to get by.
Yeah. No, it's not easy, but like, that's kind of the whole thing though. Anything that's worth doing, it's hard usually, you know? And so it, you know, like you could argue like for rich people, it's easier, like especially for ultra wealthy people, because they can have a private chef and blah, blah, blah. But they, in most cases, generated that wealth through something that was very difficult, you know? Yeah. So, and that's another thing I hate when people like, you know, like I hate how we have this culture of hating the wealthy now. Cause
it's very strange.
The stats are really weird too. Cause, was it 90% of millionaires are first generation self-made. So there isn't like this old idea of like the, you know, the Rothschilds or like the Monopoly man handing down one generation after generation. Only 10% of like ultra wealth comes from that. But even more so, 90% of millionaires are self-created, first generation, and 70% of those will have lost all their wealth by the third generation after them.
Oh.
So there is no generational wealth. There's a couple of families.
Yeah, no, and I think people do see the Rothschilds or even the Trumps is a perfect example. But lest we forget, Donald was bankrupt in the mid-90s. He hit the skids. So
yeah, I'm not especially a Donald Trump fan, but people really word things it's what our media does so badly. They'll say like he got a million dollar loan, and then they'll emphasize and say, because he said I got a small $1 million loan. Like, oh God, can you imagine thinking that's a small loan?
Yeah.
Well, that is, I mean, really for the scale of things he was trying to do, that is small.
For commercial real estate in Manhattan.
Exactly. And that's what like people don't understand. Like, and so like, I would always say, well, like put that reference out against someone else. Your family doctor, how much do you think it cost to buy his practice?
Yeah.
At least $1 million. If he's not are you saying if he's a billionaire in 20 years, he's a failed doctor?
Yeah.
You know?
No. It's funny. I'm the same way. I've been very open. I'm not particularly a fan of President Trump either, but I'm objective.
Yeah.
At least I can.
That's where I really try to be like look at the numbers. Yeah. Yeah. That's when you word it that way, a small $1 million loan, that sounds ridiculous, but yes, you can't buy even in Richland, Michigan, where I live, you can't buy any commercial property for $1 million. Commercial real estate is brutally expensive.
And then people's perception of things and the way they word it and the way they look at it, where you're talking about it's very in vogue to hate the rich.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is crazy because we should, like, it's just mind-boggling to me because if you watch, like, old movies, we just had a culture of appreciating the successful, you know, like, the rich people were not, weren't hated. They were like, oh, look at how well they've done.
I have told this story so many times. People who were good looking,
people who were in shape, people who were successful in something, just anything. I've
told this story so many times, and I it bears repeating, but I was doing a TV show in New York City and the ABC flew me out to do it. So they got me a first class ticket. I'm 175 pounds. I would never spend my money on a first class ticket because I'm not big enough where I think the juice meets the squeeze. But they flew me first class and I'm like, I'll take it.
Yeah,
if you're paying. And I'm sitting in first class and they board you first, right? And I get boarded and the lady's like, would you like some champagne, sir? I was like, no, I'll have some water. I'm fine. And I'm sitting there and enjoying it. And as the rest of the plane boards, I literally went like this.
Yeah.
Because I felt ashamed.
If someone might see me.
And I landed in New York. And that night I did Love Line with Dr. Drew via like a satellite line. And I was telling this story to Dr. Drew. And he said, that's very hurtful to hear because in 1965, do you think Don Draper was in for, and no, he's like, what would happen is Don Draper sat there proud of his accomplishments and a guy walked by with his son and he said, son, one day you work hard.
Yep.
You could be like that guy instead of a bunch of families going, fuck this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to go sit in our chair.
That should be our seat. That should be our money. Yeah. Yeah. It's the, and I think it's a lot of it again goes to what, you know, like what you've experienced people, cause I grew up poor, you know, like, I mean, working class, my dad's a pipe fitter. My mom stayed home. And then later on, when I got older, she became a nurse and they've through pure hard work have been, I mean, like, you know, middle American successful, you know, my dad eventually got moved out of pipe fitting and then went into sales and then eventually started his own company as a salesman. And my mom ended up being CEO of the hospital in town, you know? So like, but nice. Good. But I mean, I saw that from, you know, like when I was really little, we lived in a trailer. So I saw the process for my dad working for GM in the 80s when like, it was like every other month he was laid off. Yeah. And my mom didn't work, you know, from that to my mom going back to school, my dad, you know, getting promoted to middle management and us buying a home with two stories, you know? And then by then I didn't get to see all the good stuff because then I moved off on my own. So, but then like after I was not weighing them down anymore, then, you know, then they moved to a house on the lake or on the river, you know, just, but you see all that and you see exactly the path. It was all work, you know, hard. Nothing's given to anyone. That's not true because things are given to some people, but like that's the, again, that's like the Rothschilds or whatever. That's like a tiny, tiny majority. Almost everyone who's successful has what they have because of like incredibly hard work. I mean, I don't know.
Risk taking.
Yeah. Oh,
that's another thing is like.
Like if you're a business owner, it's not like, I mean, tell someone to start a business. You have a passion, just go through what you have to do to start a business. You know, you bet everything you have, everything, your retirement, your home, you lay it all on the line. And it's like, if this fails, we're done.
Yeah.
But not only that, because to grow, you always have to spend more than you make.
So
you have to lay it all over and over and over and, you know, and then finally it pays off and you're successful. And then like for people to think like that you were given that or, you know, it's a weird thought process because I grew up with work hard, you know, like look up to people who are, it was like look up to the people doing well to me, it was presented as look up to the people who've worked hard,
right.
You know, not just like now it's like, oh, look at those rich people. With the exact same scenario, you could say, look at those people who really worked their butt off.
And also because I think there was a culture in generations past. I certainly grew up in this culture where look at these people who work hard didn't always have money attached to it because there were landscapers sometimes that would come by and my dad would say, go talk to these guys. They've been busting their ass and it matters to them.
Yeah.
The job that they do, yeah. You know, it wasn't necessarily thing, yeah. Finance that was attached to
the people don't
respect
care about,
the game.
Yeah. It was, that's exactly how it was presented to me. It was never really about, I had no idea like what a lot of money even was, you know, as a kid, you don't unless someone tells you. So I was never told, I had no idea, but that's how it was presented to me. Like, look at those people, like take care in your job or, you know, and that's just so lost, which is so weird to me. Cause it's like, that's the vast majority of your life is spent working. I mean, really, if you work, you know, 40 hours a week, 8 hours a day, and you sleep 8 hours, there's 8 hours extra in between. But like four of those are spent driving to work, driving home from work, getting dressed for work, you know.
Listening to your kid tell you about fill in the blank. You
know? Yeah. So work is your whole life. Yeah. And so like for the people that just do it to get it over with so that they can, you know, do what they want in the week. It's like, that's crazy because that's your whole life. And yeah, if, you know, it's not fun. If it's fun, they wouldn't call it work, but it's your life.
Yeah.
So why not try to be good at it?
Well, and that same ethic, in my opinion, I'd be interested to get you two, your take on it too, because I think that whole, like, I hate that person because they're wealthy thing is the same thing that's leading to everyone when you put up a picture of someone with a great physique. And immediately 95% of the comments are trend.
Yeah.
Well, if I had as much money to spend on drugs, I would look that way too. And it's like, let's just say the person we're talking about did do all the gear there is.
Mm-hmm.
It still was 8 meals a day that they didn't want to eat. And
the PED grind. Thing is an interesting one also, because I think the DEA estimates that 3 million Americans use anabolic steroids. I don't know if they just call it PEDs or whatever the grouping is. I don't know if GH would count or whatever, but they just uses gear in any given year.
What percentage of that is hormone replacement therapy?
But like, just do the numbers though. Yeah. 3 million, there's a little over, there's 330 million or whatever.
It's like 1%?
So 1 in 100, but that's everyone. That's counting newborns and 100-year-old women. So let's say who takes gear, 18 to, you know, 55-year-old men, even that's probably, you know, on the high end, you know, but there's like 75 million of those. So 1 in 25?
Yeah.
So 1 in 25 adult men use PEDs in any given year. Do 1 in 25 men even have a gym membership? So if you drew the numbers, everyone at the gym has tried something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, I mean.
So like the ones that look like, so if everyone has tried it, doesn't everyone look amazing?
That's an amazing breakdown. Yeah. No, you're right. That's because if that was
the only factor, then everyone at the gym would be ripped.
Well, and also I've noticed it, and this is more just bro science, but this is anecdotal, but I think it matters. I was probably 30 and I went to a wedding, and at this wedding, one of the man getting married was jacked, was a bodybuilder guy. Mm. So there was a bunch of meatheads there and we're all talking.
Right.
And seven of these, let's say 10 for easy math, there were 10 of these guys, seven of them were really big, but really fat. And three of them were really well put together. And to a T, I'm telling you, this is 100%. I know it sounds like,
I think I know what you're going to say. Even
the seven that were big and strong and fat were talking about drugs.
Yep.
And I'm sitting here over kind of eavesdropping on these three dudes who are varying ages talking about food.
Yeah.
Talking, all they're talking about is food. Yeah. They're not training. They're not talking about drugs.
It's funny. I've seen, experienced exact same thing. You go, if I meet a gym bro, a permabulker gym bro, like that exact scenario you just said in the gym, the first thing he's going to ask me is about gear. If I meet a pro bodybuilder, or if I'm hanging out with bodybuilders, that's all they talk about. I mean, it's like obsessive. That's, you know, like when we schedule a photo shoot for First Attachment, they're all paranoid. You know, is food going to be there? Do we have to bring our own? I'm flying. I don't know. What if it gets picked? You know, confiscated by TSA? Is there anything placed close? You guys can't. That's all they think about. You know, and I tell a story, like Nick Walker, one of the best bodybuilders in the world, cracked me up because like he must have been his 30th birthday or whatever, some birthday, big birthday. And whatever supplement company was with threw him like a birthday party. And so they're at a restaurant and there's like this big party at this restaurant. And he's in the middle of the off season, not getting ready for a contest or anything. And it's his birthday, and he walks in with his Tupperware of food.
Dang.
You know? And so, like, that, and that's it. And it's like, going back to that culture thing, you can only be as good as in anything as eugenics allow. You know, you're limited by your mental capacity, your intelligence, your ability to think outside the box, your analytic ability and analytical things. You're limited by your athletic ability and athletic things. You're always bound by that, and we all are. And some of our upper bounds are higher than other people's. But regardless, the only thing we can control is our effort. And in every case, if you put all your effort into anything, you're going to be like, you're going to be better than almost everyone, you know, like everyone except those very few number of people who also gave their all, who also had better genetics than you.
Right.
Which is a very small percentage of people, because one, almost no one puts all their effort into anything anymore, ever. Everyone, I mean, I don't want to say like the old man, because I've been that same way. I've found myself doing things and like half-assing it, you know? Yeah. And it's like, well, and if I'm upset where I'm at in that portion of my life, I know why, you know, but almost no one puts all their effort in or anything. And then almost no one has great genetics, you know? So if you just put all in everything, you're gonna be better than almost everyone.
That's what I always tell the ladies when it gets time for fucking.
Yeah.
Cause I say, listen, like, clearly I wasn't blessed. Yeah.
It's a bell curve. It's a distribution.
I'm going to put in all my effort. You're going to get jackrabbit style. Yeah,
I'm a standard deviation. The wrong way for size, but the right way for effort.
In the hands of a skilled ninja, Justin Harris, even a small dagger.
Yeah, well, you can't even see it with some ninjas. That's part of the ninja thing.
The surreptitious.
You wouldn't even know I was there.
Yeah. You know, talking about the people who are, you know, Nick Walker walking in with his Tupperware. That said, and I think even you can admit, I know certainly I can admit, as someone who's competed, I was never aspiring to be Mr. Olympia, but I've been in the world of bodybuilding. It's kind of silly.
Very, you know, extremely.
Posing for people to judge you in trunks is
oiled
weird.
Up and oiled up. Terrible fake tan.
If you can do it, if you can be Nick Walker walking in with the Tupperware, it says something about your mind, will.
That's what drives me crazy about the sport is, if you can step on stage in shape, so you've, like, it, you know, step on stage is easy. You just sign up. But step on stage in condition.
Be good.
Yeah. You can do any. There's nothing that will be as hard as that. Nothing.
I kind of agree.
I mean, what else is? Like, starting a business is scary and risky. But even if you work 100 hours a week, it's still less effort than two cardio sessions a day, starving yourself on terrible fish, you know, training with no energy. You know, no energy. It's a different type of no energy when you get that low body fat. You don't have any carbohydrates or fats or easy energy source. And to be able to do that and function and still output like a difficult physical endeavor at a high workload, there's nothing as hard as that. And so it always blows my mind that so few bodybuilders, and you have to be self-motivated because you're not getting paid. There isn't a boss telling you to. So to be able to be that self-motivated on something that difficult, and the fact that so few of them transfer to something else after, you know, you have Arnold, obviously, anyone who steps on stage could maybe not be Arnold because, again, you know, like the genetic limitations. But I guarantee the hardest Arnold ever worked at anything he's done in his life was bodybuilding.
Yeah.
He didn't work that hard at acting. He didn't work that hard at real estate. He didn't work that hard at being, you know, at politics, you know, but he was, you know, like, excelled at the highest level in all of those. And I guarantee if you ask him what the hardest thing he ever did would be training for the Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
So anyone who's like trained has already worked harder than Arnold has to do all the things he succeeded with.
Yeah. I think it was Phil Daru was talking about it. He said the big difference between being a professional fighter or competitive fighter and being a competitive bodybuilder is that you get done with the fight. Mm-hmm. And even though another trained man just beat the piss out of you, you get done and you feel like, okay, you know, let's go on to the next one. I get a cold shower and a meal and I can, you get done bodybuilding at a high enough level. Like you still, it destroys you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really like I think Kai Greene said it's professional suffering.
Yeah.
Who can
yeah.
suffer better?
It is. Yeah. And it's so, and it's even like, it's so close to that, that the biggest issue good bodybuilders have is losing, like where the line is. Because to be really good, you have to suffer so much. It's hard, your brain starts to think that the suffering is what you're doing.
Right.
And so it's hard to not, you know, like, well, I have two paths I could go down for this next week. This one, I think, you know, like logically this one would make me a better bodybuilder, but this one would make me suffer more. And people start trying to go that because they just, your brain starts thinking it's the suffering.
Well, and it's very similar as a drug addict. It's kind of the same thing too, is that you don't, no one gets deep into addiction without it being fun at first.
Well, that, and that
drugs
like,
work.
Yeah. I think was it George Carlin, I think, had a interesting thing on that when he stopped doing it. And it like, it's makes perfect sense. Cause the first time you do drugs, it's all good.
Yeah.
You know, like if you do, first time you do a line of coke, it's like, I was here. This is, I've been here my whole life. And now for 20 minutes, I'm here. This is amazing. You
I'm
know,
better looking.
Yeah. Oh, and I got so
way
many
more charismatic.
Yeah, I got business ideas out the ass, you know, and, but, you know, but then it wears off and you get depressed. You get that dopamine, like, you know, lol. But, and so there's that dip, but then you're back to baseline, you know? And as, but for a long time, it's so much more good than bad. And then they start getting blurred, you know, and then you, like what happened, the worst part is then you're addicted, physically addicted. And heroin, I think, would be the best one to say, because you're physically addicted. You have to have it every so often or you're dope sick and you're terrible. So now it's your baseline is miserable. That's just you're always miserable, you know, and if you take heroin, you get back to almost as good as you used to feel with nothing. You're at least alive for a little bit. And then it's a slow trend down.
The best you can hope for is not miserable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what, and so you can imagine when people are like, why don't they just stop doing it? It's like, because like they're in hell for months, you know, it's like, you can't like, why don't you just put your, you know, like, yes, this sucks, but as a functioning drug addict, I, you know, I still have a family, you know, like I'm still hiding it from people, still able to keep a job, you know. If I stop, I'm going to have to somehow keep all that, all the charade up with no energy, throwing up, you know, and
survival mechanism kicking in, literally thinking you're going to die.
Yeah. And literally dying sometimes even. Yeah. And so it's like, it's not an easy answer, but.
And where do, because I fear, especially when women get a certain level of body transformation, right? Where do you help try and draw that line when it's that woman, you know, like the muscle mom we see on Instagram right now, who like, God, all power to you're looking in the mirror and you're not happy and you grind and you make that change. Right. Mm-hmm. I think so many young men and women in that situation then get into the bodybuilder territory where it's like, you're not even getting a paycheck for this and you're going to,
I've seen this so many times. This is like always my saddest client. You get like a, you know, late 30s housewife who's really unhappy with how she looks, just unhappy in general, you know, and it, and like even worse, like her husband buys her the, you know, plan as like a gift, you know, and like not like a mean gift, like, here, lose weight, lady, you know, it's like
she's trying to help.
Yeah, you know, like she wants it, you know, and he's like, oh, you know, let's do this. I'll pay for it. You know, so he gives this gift to her and then like she follows the diet and she gets really into it and she loses the weight and she loses all the fat and she's in great shape and she's starting to really like it. And their marriage almost always is better for a while. It's great. She's got energy. She's happy about life. She's excited about life. Every day has a purpose now. And then, you know, she wants to try a contest. You know, and then so she decides she wants to do a contest, but then she learns about, you know, steroids, and then she starts on some of those, and then the progress happens even faster, and she loves that, and he loves it too, because now her sex drive is through the roof, and she looks amazing, you know, and so their marriage is going great, and then she gets really into the sport, and wants to do more contests, and now she's getting like, now, you know, and then she usually gets like, you know, fake boobs, and now she's getting a ton of attention at the gym, you know, and you know, their marriage is still doing good, but her husband doesn't give her attention like all these guys do. You know, he acts like she's old news. These guys, like these 20-year-old kids are hitting on her like crazy, you know? And then now pretty soon the kids are like a drag because she's got to do cardio twice a day because she's prepping. And it's a snowball I've seen happen so many times. And they get totally sucked into like the culture and the obsession with, you know, like people getting the attention. And then 2 years down the road, they've stopped listening to advice on, you know, when they should safely use PEDs, and they have, you know, a deep voice. They have, you know, they're starting to grow facial hair, a lot of virilization issues.
Don't even get me started with the clitoris.
The penis.
Looks like a croissant.
Yeah.
It's like one of those miniature little croissants, gentlemen.
It's like a water weenie.
But you're right. And then
they get divorced. And then she says, you know, like, this is, I'm better because she, it's like, not even like I'm a better, it's like this weird delusion you get where it's like, I'm working so hard at stuff, I'm making my life better. We're just at different phases in our life.
And you couldn't handle me changing my life.
Yeah, exactly.
You couldn't handle the new me.
Yeah.
And it's like, well.
And they get divorced. And I've seen this so many times. They get divorced. She never hardly sees the kids anymore. And then now she's got facial hair. And it's just a disaster. And
I'm not coaching any of these women or even at the level where I would consider someone, but I've been around it enough. And where I, And it's so sad because, like I said, I could right now, out of all the demos of people who get really into fitness, I picked that one because I knew, like, those are, there's going to be the guys and gals that, like, at 19 decided I'm going to Olympia. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to be, then there's those people where it's like, they discover what a body transformation can do. And it goes too far.
Yeah. It doesn't have to. A perfect example who's probably calling me right now is Danny Lamartina might win the Chicago Pro for women's physique today. She was first or second. She's a client and she's has no side effects. They plan to have kids. She's happily married. So like that. And that's the really frustrating thing is because you can be a bodybuilder and do all these things and have it not negatively affect things. Mm-hmm. But it takes more effort to do that than just, if you let things just fall where they fall, it always falls towards the downside. And for men, there's the same, like whatever, like Sally or whatever this girl would be, there's a John that does the same thing in a different way. It's a guy who's become really successful. So he did, you know, like it's almost always a businessman, wealthy businessman, you know, hyper successful. And from age 20 to 45, you know, he worked 100-hour weeks, did nothing but work. Right. And now he's got money, you know, he's, you know, incredible investments. His portfolio is outrageous. You know, he just buy and have anything he wants. And he gets into, he meets a bot, he joins a gym. And then he meets some bodybuilder, and the bodybuilder clings to him as soon as he finds out that this guy's driving
Lambert. Yeah. Yeah.
And then so they make this weird friendship, and go to any big gym and you'll find this friendship.
Yeah.
And then that guy gets hyper into it, and he starts using, you know, but he's, you know, he's 50 and he's lived a hard life where he hadn't slept more than 4 hours a night for years building these businesses. And so he's not in the position to start blasting things heavily, but he does. And I've seen heart attacks. I've seen, you know, marriages fail from that. It's a weird thing, like, because it's almost, I love the sport, but it's like drug addiction. It's hard to toe the line of doing it correctly without falling over into the bad stuff.
So let's wrap it up with this. Guys who, certainly guys are competing, guys and gals that are at a competitive level, they don't really need to hear this. Please like and subscribe and buy First Detachment and check out Tropin and Nutrition, the whole thing. But let's be honest, they don't need it because they're going to probably shell out the money to get to that next level if they need to. Mm-hmm. But to be 10%, 12%, walk around, look great at the beach, they don't need this. Mm-mm. But the guy and gal right now listening that desperately wants to make the change, what are the changes from you that need to be made right now, day one?
Don't stop listening to fitness celebrities or any of that. Everything they say is wrong. Most of the time, so wrong, it's not even wrong. It's like a different thing. I don't even know. It's super simple. Pick it, kill it, grow it. If you can't pick it from a tree, grow it in a garden, or hunt it for meat, don't eat it. Simple as that. And that's why people in the 50s look the way they did, because that's all you had. Yeah. You didn't have Rice Krispies treats. They didn't have, you know, Pop-Tarts. They had
rice.
Yeah, they had meat and rice. And we even sell meat rice repeat, chicken rice repeat, steak rice repeat shirts. Eat that. You want, you know, to lose fat, you need to eat less than you burn, but you don't know what your metabolism is. But the good thing is, if you eat lean meat, rice, and vegetables, you don't have to think about it much because it's almost self-limiting in that you're eating things your body needs, and your body's going to send the same hunger signals, and it's going to take much less calories to satisfy that hunger signal and much more food volume. So typically, you'll be able to eat more. Your plates will be bigger. Your calories will be lower. And you'll be even more satisfied with food if you just let yourself eat. And then join a gym and train hard. Do, you know, 30 minutes of cardiovascular work a day, 5 days a week. And then do an hour of weight training four of those days. And for like 99% of people, I mean, like movie actor jacked, almost anyone can get to that level with a year or two of that.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. And that's without drugs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Judgmental pricks out there. Yeah. I mean, of course, drugs help. There's no doubt about it.
You know, but I just hate what this sport is so weird because there's drugs in every sport. No, obviously not to the level of bodybuilding. And that's what separates it, you know, because there's such a prominent role in it. But no
maybe grappling. I don't know. Maybe. Professional grappling right now is only.
Well, go ahead. Yeah. Well, yeah. And beating Luisada is that's the trick. That's the hard part. Then, so with I won't say, but but no one out there would think like if I just take enough steroids, I could play left tackle for the Cowboys. because they're not 6'8". They're not 320 pounds. No one thinks like, you know what? If I could just get enough gear, maybe the source comes through, I'm going to be pitching in the majors.
Because
they don't throw 100 miles
throwing
an hour.
Heat. I'll be throwing heat.
Obviously, if you throw 97 and you take steroids, maybe you're hitting 100, you know? But you still got to have I don't know what it is for bodybuilding that people just decide genetics don't matter. Because everyone's taking PEDs, they think that that's all it is. But it's not. It's like it's the same as any other sport, and probably even more genetically so, you know, because like a Ronnie Coleman, he's going to be the best. No one can touch that, you know.
I'll never forget. I think it was on Rogan. He said, Joe said, like, what if there's someone out there who really wants to look like you? He's like, they can't.
Yeah.
And Joe's like, what do you mean? He's like, no, they can't. He's still really jacked. Yeah.
You can't even walk. He's in a weird.
What was his training video? It was one of his training videos where he went back to his mom's house and his mom was cooking for him. And he's like, mom, show him that, you know, because he's super country. Yeah. He's like, show him that double bicep. And jokingly, she goes like this, and it looks like my arm.
At like 72.
Seen a gym in the backwoods of Louisiana, you know?
See, that's what I like. For me, my genetics was strength. And it's like that, like some, you know, like I'm not like just like hyper genetically gifted, but my dad always used to say that he could bench 300 pounds in high school. And we always like, shut up, dad. You've never worked out a day in your life. Cause he doesn't work out, you know, he's big, but he's big, you know? Yeah. And so when I was in high school, I wanted to show him how strong I was getting. Cause I was really into working out. So I took him to the gym. And again, he said, you know, I used to bench 300 pounds in high school. I was like, yeah, I know you didn't. I wanted to show him he couldn't, you know? So I put 225 on. He grabs the bar crooked, like not pinky on the, like one pinky on one ring, middle finger on the other. He brings it down to his stomach and he does 10 reps. And I was like, he's like, how much is 300? And I lied and said three plates was, because it's really 315. But I really didn't want him to get it. Gets under the same thing, grabs it all wrong, brings it on his stomach, does three reps with it. I was like, what the So
I can't 315 right now. I can't.
So
that's insane.
Well, I learned because I like strength is what I was gifted at, you know, like so that's kind of how I built my business was putting, you know, video because I looked like a bodybuilder, but I lifted as heavy as a powerlifter and the videos on YouTube kind of made my name. And I almost got a little depressed because when I went back to grad school, I hadn't worked out in years. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't intentional. I just kind of like. I'm kind of an all or nothing guy. If I'm into something, I'm in like, so when I was into math and physics, I forgot bodybuilding even existed. Right. It just wasn't an interest for me. But I went to the rec center one time and I wanted to see, you know, like what I could, you know, lift. And I did 315 for four and I hadn't worked out in 5 years, which is, it was cool. But then I was like, I kind of almost got depressed because I was like, man, this whole time I thought I was stronger than everyone because I worked so hard, you know, but it all goes back to like you're good at some things and you're not good at other things. You know, and you can't pick what you like. Also, if you're lucky enough to like the things you're good at, that's awesome. But
okay. So you're being modest, but you're also being realistic. If at that point in your life, what if you got on like a C2 rower and did like a 500 meter sprint? I mean, that would have been utterly miserable. Oh, right?
If I could even made it, no, I've been
so people have to like keep it.
Yeah, or like try to run a 5K. Like my wife. Hasn't ran, you know, she used to ran marathons. She hasn't like ran seriously in a decade or more. I guarantee she could do a half marathon just today. Like, if a friend was like, hey, you busy? You know,
like it's like those, like your cab driver in Thailand, all overweight and like probably 6 years old. If push came to shove, he's putting out that cigarette and he's going to fuck you up. He's going to teep your face
especially
off.
Especially if he's wearing like a Hawaiian t-shirt.
Oh, yeah. Those you're guys done. Done.
Or that's like, that's so funny. Have you ever been to the Philippines?
I have.
Like go to karaoke bar.
I've never been to the Philippines, but I've been to kind of the Mekong Delta. Okay. There
if you go to like a karaoke bar, everyone is the greatest singer on earth. They go up and there'll be like some dude will step up and do a duet of the man and woman and hit both voices perfectly.
Yeah,
it's remarkable. And same with pool. Like pool halls are huge over there. Some of those guys playing with like bent sticks and they'll run 10 racks and 9 ball in a row. It's funny how different areas are,
it's kind of like what is culturally important.
Mm, yeah, you know, exactly.
I was having this argument the other day with someone who was kind of leaning more into the, I don't know how to put this without it sounding terrible because it is. He was more of kind of pushing the eugenics idea of certain people are genetically better. And I go, listen, do you understand there's never been like a Mexican competitor for the country of Mexico in any like aquatic sports. Do you think because you're born below the Mexican border that you naturally can't swim.
Yeah.
No, it's because culturally, every kid wants to be a boxer or a baseball player. And how many fucking awesome boxers and baseball players?
Yeah.
And Daryl Strawberry said the same. He was on Loveline. I go, you know, Daryl, you're from Los Angeles. And it used to be that Los Angeles was like really a hotbed and really well known and well regarded for being this place for young black guys to become great baseball players. It goes at Joe Morgan, and Eric Davis, and Daryl Strawberry.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, it just changed. It's not, he said, it's nothing to do with anything else. It's just like when I was a kid, it was super cool to blast home runs in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And now everyone's playing basketball.
Yeah.
And it's just,
well, it's funny. I have a kind of a similar story with that. My daughter played travel soccer, and some of the parents would get so into it, you know, and the kids don't even know, they didn't know like who the top soccer players were. They weren't fans of the sport, you know.
Just having fun.
Well, parents were fighting about something, and I was like, chill, these girls are 10 years old. I said, none of them are going to play professionally anyways. There's some kid kicking coconuts in the Dominican Republic who's going to play in the World Cup, you know. So they changed their name to Coconut Kickers. But that's the thing. Like, you go down there, that those kids know the history of the sport. They know, like, Maradona's hand of God or whatever. Yeah. You know, they know how many goals Messi scored in some game that I don't even know happened. And they wake up thinking about soccer. They play soccer at recess. They play soccer before school, after school. You know, and that's all they do. And so that, you know, like, if you sending your kid to a really expensive private lesson for an hour a week, it's never going to compare to that. They're just immersed.
Who's
in
willing
it.
To play barefoot?
Yeah, you know? And with rocks. Yeah, yeah. Or deflated soccer balls, or they wrap like duct tape around deflated soccer balls to give it some stiffness. I mean, like, that's all they do.
Why this shithead always chokes me. Because like, I can be buff, I can train, but he's obsessive about it and choking me. Next thing you know what I'm saying? Justin, honestly, it was a real pleasure talking to you, man.
Yeah,
it
flew by, yeah.
Thank you, dude. Firstattachment.com, also tropaninnutrition.com if you want information about Justin's coaching availability. Also, any type of online training programs. I highly recommend the myofibril training. Myoplasmic growth?
Yeah.
Because it is a very well-detailed blend of of like the sarcoplasmic stuff you need and, you know, uni joint stuff, but also the bread and butter.
Yeah,
you know,
we've got to get nasty. Kind of ruin it with that because that's the best program I've ever written. And so, like, people want me to write new programs, but I feel like
why?
I know. And then it goes back to the Ronnie Coleman. Like, part of me wants to write new ones because I know they'll sell, but I also know they won't be as good. And it's like, something works, it works.
Is there anything else you'd like to promote before we wrap things up?
With teamtroponin.com also, which is a separate business, but it's a fully education site. It's much cheaper monthly subscription with a couple hundred hours of video footage, hundreds of articles. But that's about it.
If you've made the choice and you've put in the hard work and now you want to step it up and if you've gotten to 13, 14% as a guy and 20% as a woman and you want to take that next step, really invest the money in this because that's, you're going to start to understand things like carb cycling, things like, you know, block, you know, programming periodization and variability. And that's what you need when you get to that level. But if you haven't gotten to that level,
it really is a different, you don't have to work with me, but it really is like probably the best money you can spend you know, 3 to 6 months with a good nutritionist, good bodybuilding coach. Cause like I wasted 8 years figuring things out, you know, like in 6 months you can have it all laid out for you. And even like there's quite a few top coaches now who used to be clients of mine. So even most of the coaches, that's where they started their path to knowledge.
Yeah. All right, man. Thank you very much. And in this crazy mixed up world. Oh, first, thank you, Giorgio. Thank you, Kevin, for making this possible, for getting the studio. Hopefully this becomes a more frequent thing. And in this crazy mixed up world that makes you think that nobody cares, remember, I do. Be good.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.